Started late, but the luncheon apparently ran a little late, and we sure wanted to hold up, give everybody an opportunity to make this and the other sessions that are taking place this afternoon. The topic that will be discussed here this afternoon will be capturing the value of preconditioned cattle. So if that's not the session that you think you're in or plan to be in, you can gracefully make an exit, and we won't look. To say we're very proud to have you here as a part of the Cattlemen's College. I thought somebody from NCBA might be here to make a few comments to kick this off, but apparently they're tied up also. I'm Clyde Lane with the University of Tennessee. I'll be on the program a little bit later. To kick the session off, we have Dr. Matt Poor from North Carolina State University, and he will be the first speaker here for this afternoon. Matt.
Okay, thanks, Clyde. And again, I'll echo that. We're glad to have such a good crowd in here, and I realize this is a very diverse group. Some of this stuff will be very elementary. Others, hopefully, will be giving you some new information. But certainly, this is a topic that is of great interest to producers in our area. Clyde and I both represent the Southeast here, where we have a lot of small cow-calf operations, people trying to figure out how to make that thing work in a industry that is dramatically changing, as I know you all realize. And so I'm going to, the title of my talk is going to be Realizing Increased Returns as a Result of Adding Value to Feeder Cattle, because I don't think anybody will argue that by preconditioning calves, hopefully we're not going to have too many technical difficulties here, but basically preconditioning calves does add value to them, and I don't think anybody will argue that with you. But it's a real challenge to get paid more for those calves, to cover some of those costs of preconditioning, but also it's definitely clear that it can cost you a lot more to add that value than it's worth. And so producers have to be very cautious and push a sharp pencil as they try to develop these programs. Now, as we move forward in the future, it'll become more and more important for producers to fine-tune both their production and marketing programs, simply because the way the industry is going now, margins are going to continue to get tighter and tighter, and it's going to be important for us to think about this as we develop our future programs. So we need to be looking at practices and traits that are valued by the buyers. This is not going to be the same in all situations, but you do need to know what the buyers of your cattle are looking for in terms of what they want to see in those calves. We need to maintain identity on those cattle and assure that they do have the value that we're representing them to have. And there's a number of ways this can be done, but certainly trace back and reputation in these cattle is one of the things that will help you to capture those that value that you're putting into the calves. And finally, we must use cost-efficient practices when we do this. And this is a pitfall a lot of our small producers fall into. They do a short-term preconditioning program, and they're looking at needing to get a 10-cent premium on these cattle just to recover their costs. It's not going to happen. So we need to make sure that we're not putting too much money into these programs. So just a brief list of things that might be valued. Certainly, basic production practices, that goes without saying, but we do see, of course, quite a bit of value from doing these practices early on in the calf's life. Genetics and predictability of the cattle are important. We need to know what market we're targeting in terms of the type of animal that we want, in terms of their carcass endpoints. Of course, these calves have to be growthy. And in our area, at least, Angus-based cattle or cattle with some Angus in them, it's important. It does carry a market premium, and we need to be aware that's the case. Preconditioning, of course, both the physical part of that, the weaning, bunk breaking, water training, those kinds of issues are important, as well as a good health and vaccination program. So all of these practices add value to cattle, and I think buyers would agree. If you do all those things, then certainly these calves are worth a lot more to them. Finally, and this is the one that in our area probably commands the biggest premium on cattle, and that is single-source truckload lots. And that is a real challenge for small producers, and I'll talk about that in a little while, how we might be able to capture some of those, some of that value, because that is clearly valued highly in this industry. Start by just asking, how much is this particular process of preconditioning worth? And there's a number of ways that we can approach that. Of course, in the A&M Ranch to Rail summaries, this comes out each year, and certainly healthy cattle are worth a lot more than cattle that get sick in the feed yard. This particular estimate of $87, the question is, you know, how many cattle in a given load are going to get sick? That's very variable, and so, you know, you can't just tell from that how much these cattle are going to be worth. If you look through what's been published recently, Dave Lallman and Bob Smith have a summary where they reviewed preconditioning research, and they reported that really these cattle should be worth somewhere around $3 to $8 per hundredweight more, just depending on the number of cattle that get sick. So that's one estimate that's been put out there. Now, okay, that's probably what they might be worth, but what about the perception of the buyers? What are they willing to pay for these cattle? The best thing I could find on this was a recent report that was done for Pfizer, King, in 2000, where he summarized data from the Superior Livestock Auction system, looked at calves that had been marketed under different kinds of marketing representations. First off, non-vaccinated, non-weaned cattle, just those cattle that have not received any of these preconditioning programs. They're basically called here zero or no premium. The VAC-34 cattle, this is cattle that have a respiratory and pasturella vaccine about 3 to 4 weeks prior to weaning, basically a pre-weaning program. About $2 a hundredweight, or about $11 a head, was what was being offered on these cattle last year over those non-preconditioned kind of cattle or non-vaccinated cattle. The other program that they talked about in that summary is the VAC-45 program. Of course, this includes two vaccinations for those major diseases, plus weaning for 45 days. So these calves have been weaned. They're on feed, bunk broke, water broke, that sort of thing. About a $4 per hundredweight advantage, or about $20 per head. Now, if you look at this and think about how you're going to make money on these cattle right now, a lot more money is made in this program probably than the VAC 45 program, simply because there's a lot more costs associated with facilities, labor, and that sort of thing in these preconditioning programs that include weaning. So right now there's probably not enough difference in these programs to cover costs that are associated with the VAC 45 kind of an approach. Now that may lead to some discussion, and hopefully we'll get some of that going later on, but that's my interpretation of this. Now, one point I want to make is all of these are tractor trailer load lots of cattle. And so the tractor trailer load premiums are already built in here, and so it's hard to, again, in the perspective of our smaller producers, it's hard for us to sort that out of this particular study. Now, I've said a lot about size of operation, and definitely that does have some impact on what's possible for producers to do as they look at how we're going to market these cattle to try to get the value out of them that we put in them. Large operations, and the way I categorize them, those with greater than 250 cows, do have the opportunity to take the calves that they have produced, sort them a number of different ways, several truckload lots, so that they can market these cattle in uniform truckload groups. They also have economy of scale in all aspects of their operation in terms of purchasing inputs, purchasing, you know, feed, all those other things, facilities, labor, all of that. They have enough there going that they do start to capture some economy of scale. Medium-sized operations, there's a lot of these, are more progressive cattlemen in the southeast. There's a lot of this size operation with 150 to 250 cows, and they are challenged to put together these groups of cattle. It is possible, but certainly uniformity becomes a real problem, because if they have a very wide spread in their calf crop or using different types of bulls and that sort of thing, it's hard for them to put together uniform groups. They do have some economy of scale. If you look at feed, for example, they can buy some, you know, tractor trailer loads of byproducts and those kinds of things to make this thing work. Small producers, and again, you can argue how I classify these, but if you go less than about 150 cows, it's very difficult and not very realistic to try to package these into truckloads. Now, that's not to say that somebody with an excellent program that has 125 cows and wants to grow these to some very heavy weights can't put those in, out as a truckload lot, but it's much more difficult and becomes not very realistic. The other problem is there are very high costs in many of the inputs that these producers have. Facilities, all those things, if you're only dealing with a few calves, it gets very expensive. Now, back to my perspective in this area and working with producers, we need to remind people that still our commingled graded sales, which have been the kind of the best way for producers to market cattle, they do provide substantial premiums for these small producers still, and we need to keep reminding people of that. Don't get discouraged and just go take them to the sale barn over the normal weekly sale and forget that you can do quite well on these graded sales. Most recent data we have from the year 1998, this was published pretty recently, we're looking at about a $4 to $5 premium over weekly sale barns. That's just because of the packaging of these cattle and the way that they're sorted into uniform lots. That premium also does not include weighing conditions, which becomes very important because a lot of times the sale barn, these cattle stand around for a long time before they come into the ring. If they're in the ring weights, then those weights can drift quite a bit. So there's probably more premium than this in those kind of cattle. Now, I don't have a lot of information in our area on preconditioned sales. We've done this over the years, but we did have a lot of preconditioned sales at one time. And basically, we were looking at about $5 premium over our graded sales on the same date for these cattle that had gone through an assured preconditioning program. So it is possible, if you've got a good reputation for your preconditioned sales, it is possible to get that little bit of premium over the other way of marketing the cattle. Now, I'm going to turn a little bit and talk about this cost side because, again, I think that's something that's very important for people to think about that are doing this kind of a program. And so this is some data that was done, again, early on in our preconditioning experience by Beecher Allison, who worked in the mountains with this program for a long time. And basically, he compared a lot of different feeding approaches. One approach was a home mixed concentrate, basically a corn and soybean meal based feed, and he was getting cost of gains for around 57 cents a pound, pretty high, but again, remember that these are barn-fed cattle that were fed hay and grain. But compare that to some of the commercial preconditioning feeds that were being heavily promoted in our area at that time, and it was quite a savings over that, and they didn't have really any difference in performance or health on these cattle, and these were sale barn purchased cattle. At the same time, he also was looking at different options in terms of the forage portion of the program and comparing hay, which is really a pretty standard program for us or was at that time, and comparing that to feeding some of these concentrates to calves that are out on high-quality pasture. And basically, not all the costs are written into these returns, but I'll talk about that in a minute. But still, about a $10 difference when those calves were preconditioned on pasture as compared to being put up on more expensive hay. So some options there to reduce the costs further. There was some work done at Virginia Tech several years ago by Bill McKinnon and Mark Wahlberg basically, these were some spring-born Angus cross calves that they were working with. They were looking at a 42-day preconditioning program. This particular portion of this study was repeated for 2 years. And they looked at three post-weaning treatments. Hay and basically 1% of body weight of a corn-based concentrate, which is pretty typical for these kinds of programs. High-quality pasture, and this would be fescue, orchard grass, and clover in that pasture, plus the same amount of that same concentrate, and then pasture only. And I'll point out here they were paying about $160 a ton for the concentrate that they used on this particular project. Now, just to run through the data here, these were pretty typical calves weighing in the low five weights. Gains were good over that time. Over the 42 days, they were ranging from a high of about 2.5 on the pasture plus grain treatment, about 1.8 on the pasture only, which is really pretty remarkably good, although you need to remember they had quite a bit of available pasture and it was high-quality forage. Final weights then were in the low sixes. If we look at their feed costs, there was a big difference between the pasture groups and the hay plus grain, and that's simply because if you do sit down and calculate out actual economic cost of hay, it's quite high compared to the pasture. Total costs, including labor and interest on the cattle and that sort of thing. You go down here to their gross returns were around $50, but if you look at the net return, essentially it was a break even on the hay plus grain cattle. Pasture and grain and pasture only were returning around $10 to $11. Now, this was assuming marketing at a commingled graded sale both before and after the preconditioning program. So again, not able to capture much return there simply because of the cost. In this case, primarily the cost of the concentrate. Now, if you look at these cattle and figure they were fed about 5 pounds of concentrate a day, if they had been using a lower cost feed and got similar performance, then they would have been able to return a little bit on those cattle. So feed cost does become the major part of this preconditioning budget. And I would suggest that it is the only category where you can really save any money. You just can't shave much money off the cost of the dewormer, off the implants, the vaccines, that sort of thing. The labor is going to be there. So the feed part of it needs to be where we look. And the trend in our area has been to go to feeding byproduct commodities. And now this takes more management on the part of the producer, but certainly has the chance to give some very significant returns. And so we see our larger producers putting up commodity sheds, starting to use a lot of byproducts, and we also see some of these larger producers starting to blend these and sell them to their neighbors so that they can use them in these lower cost preconditioning programs. Now, the three feeds that we see most, and I think actually across the whole country, these are the three that have the most interest in them. Soybean hulls is the seed coat of the soybean. It's very digestible. It's a good source of protein and energy and works well in these high forage diets. They're very palatable, and once you get calves started on feed, you can go in with a very high level of the concentrated soybean hulls and have very good performance and very good results. Wheat mids is another one, available pretty much across the whole country. It's a byproduct, of course, of flour production, and it's also a good source of energy and protein. Now, you have to be a little more cautious with wheat mids than with soy hulls, especially in terms of feeding level, because they do have a lot of very digestible starch in them and can cause some digestive upsets if you start cattle too quick on them. But certainly, they do have potential in these kinds of programs and have been worked on at a number of locations. Corn gluten feed is the third one, and certainly in Tennessee, North Carolina, and other places, it's probably the one that year in and year out is the best buy. There's quite a bit of data showing that the wet corn gluten feed is better than the dry, and some of our large producers are using wet gluten feed once they get these cattle on feed. But certainly, smaller producers, the wet gluten doesn't work very well. So we do have a lot of people that use dry gluten, sometimes with very disappointing results. We do have several different sources. Some of those sources, cattle simply don't find it very palatable, and we have a very difficult time getting them on feed. Some of the other sources, and actually it seems to vary batch to batch, are very good and very palatable and give good results. So we're doing some research at this point to try to sort out some of the reasons for why we see that. But certainly, again, as I said, this year, corn gluten feed is the only thing that is an economical choice if a producer has to go buy something on the spot market. So basically, to summarize, a lot of work. We've done a lot of work at NC State. There's been a lot of work done elsewhere. Quite a bit of work done recently at Kentucky. Oklahoma State, of course, has done a lot of this. But basically, these have shown that once you get cattle on feed, that soybean hulls, wheat mids, or corn gluten feed can be used and give you nearly equal results as a mix of corn and soybean meal or a commercial feed. with the understanding that, you know, you're not going to be able to put an ionophore in them unless you actually go through the cost of mixing and that sort of thing. And so there may be some need to use an ionophore in a free choice mineral or something like that. But certainly you can work these into a management program and get good results at them when they're fed at this 1% or so of body weight along with pasture or hay. Now, again, the Virginia Tech group has been doing some more work on that recently with these short-term weeding programs, and they are finding that especially soybean hulls fits very well in that program and can further increase those returns by another $5 to $10 a head over what they would get with a corn-based concentrate. Now, just to show you a little bit of results, and again, I could pull this results from anywhere, but we've done quite a bit of work at our Upper Mountain Research Station at Laurel Springs, North Carolina. And this is some calves that were basically straightened out and then put on as five weights for a three-month program. Average daily gains were a little bit in excess of 2 pounds a day and not different between a concentrate that was corn and soybean meal, a commercial high-quality concentrate purchased in our area, soybean hulls or wheat mids, both of these in the pelleted form. So very comparable performance, hay intake, and this includes hay wastage as well, were very comparable for all four of those concentrate approaches. Now, if you calculate some economics on that and look at the cost structure, basically hay intake was the same, so there's no difference there. Mineral intake was the same. The concentrate intake was the same, so the only difference here is simply the cost of the concentrate. There's a typical cost for pelleted soy hulls, typical cost for that commercial concentrate, and I've pulled those two out. You follow this all the way down to return over feed costs, somewhere around $5 when we use that commercial concentrate and about $21 for the soy hull. So this cost of the concentrate does end up having a great, a big effect on total returns. And again, if we had done this on pasture, and cut this forage cost approximately in half, then those returns would be quite attractive. Something that's happening really across the entire country, but in our area a lot, I know it's happening a lot in Kentucky, Oklahoma, and elsewhere with colleagues I've talked to, but that is self-feeding of some of these byproducts. We're starting to see this a lot on farms that are either preconditioning sale barn cattle or larger producers that are wanting to background these calves. And basically what we found is that soybean hulls seem very well suited to this use. We do have some people that use both corn gluten feed and wheat nibs, and that also seems to have some potential, although there are some management issues with those that are more difficult to overcome than the soybean hulls. But cattle basically will eat somewhere around 8 to 12 pounds of them out of a self-feeder if they've got decent quality hay or pasture, and gains will be somewhere between 2 or 3 pounds per day. Now, this works well for about a 60-day program. You get much longer than that, and you start to have some problems with some of these cattle getting overfat, and also in some situations they may start to fall apart on you. But certainly in these shorter-term programs, this works very well. Now, again, one of the cautions with soybean hulls is there is some potential for bloat, and certainly producers that have experimented with this will see that on occasion. Again, there's some research out of Dave Lallman's group that shows that if you do put an ionophore mineral out there, Rumensin basically will reduce this bloat problem and that you can get through this with minimal problems. Now, if you're going to put commodities into a backgrounding program for calves, purchasing decisions becomes the major issue. And certainly if you look at the spot market right now, go back here to earlier in the month and look at some of the prices on soy hulls quoted out of Charlotte, North Carolina, $125 a ton. I know I was up in Kentucky in mid-December, and it was the same thing up there. And so that's up from about $60 a ton back during the summer. And so if you're going to do this, you need to plan ahead, purchase these ingredients before the seasonal price swing happens. And certainly both soy hulls and gluten feed will store very well and could be purchased in late summer and used in a fall backgrounding program without any problems. So that's kind of the caution about planning if you're going to use this approach. Now I want to give you an example of a real case that from this year. And this, I know this case pretty well because this is my parents' operation. And we've been trying to make this thing work for a number of years. We've put a lot of value, we feel, into the calves, but have had the same experience as a lot of people, taking them to the graded sale, our normal marketing, and they're standing right next there, right there next to a ball and calf, and we're getting the same price per pound. So we've done a lot of things to try to come around this. This farm is in Central Virginia, runs 150 brood cows. It's basically early spring calving or late winter, whichever way you want to look at it, starting about now and calving through the middle of March. The genetics are based on Angus. There are crossbred cows in the herd, but basically we've got involved with an Angus program that really has focused on trying to have all similar type bulls, and so we've put together the same type of bulls for the operation. We do have added value marketing goals. One is to market 25 to 30 bred heifers per year. Been doing a good job of getting that done. And then also to market our steers as a truckload. And again, I said 150 cows is kind of that breaking point between where you can make it happen and where you can't. So we're very challenged to get this done. But some of the things that we've used to make it happen are using, again, this uniform genetic base, a tight calving season. We also purchase a limited number of calves from our neighbors that have purchased our bulls when we're done with them. So we know they're the same kind of genetics. And sometimes, you know, you have 60% heifers and 40% bulls. Looks like we're going to have that kind of a year this year. Got to come up with some extra steers to make this truckload marketing possible. And so we are able to work with neighbors and get that done. Using a byproduct-based concentrate, stockpiled fescue for the pasture, for that preconditioning period. Split feeding of the light and heavy steers. We didn't do that this year, but in years we have pulled the light calves off at weaning, fed them separately, pushed them a little bit harder than the heavier calves to try to uniform things up. Now, I keep saying backgrounding and preconditioning, kind of interchanging those two, and I try to catch myself and make myself not do it, because when you start keeping them 100 days, it's really not a preconditioning program anymore. It's really backgrounding. So keeping these calves for about 100 days post-weaning, putting some weight on them, again, to try to make that truckload goal. The final thing that we have is we have a marketing representative that works with us that has a very good reputation with buyers in the area, and they may not remember our calves, but they remember our marketing representative. And when he gets on the phone and describes these cattle and says, "You remember these calves are the same ones we sold last year," they start to remember the calves. And so that becomes a real critical part of this. And just to give you a little bit more detail on the program, stage one of this year, we did wean early, weaned about September 1, ran through November 18th in this approach, and this was because we had the heifers in there. We didn't want to get them too fat, so 4 pounds of corn gluten pellets, 10 pounds of stockpiled fescue. We are using a free choice Rumensin mineral to try to get that ionophore advantage into the cattle. The second stage of this was from that point where we weighed the cattle and made a decision on what to do up to the truckload marketing January 16th. The later part of that, we did push these cattle a little bit harder. We've used some gluten pellets as well as some soy hull pellets. Again, the stockpile pasture and the Rumensin mineral. And basically, this shows feeding of those cattle. This is the byproduct concentrate, very palatable. And these cattle will go ahead and perform, and they actually gain 2.25 pounds a day on that second stage of this program. Again, I think the key to this is making good use of high-quality forage. Here's moving the fence in a strip grazing approach for these calves, keeping them moving every 2 or 3 days on high-quality forage and giving them plenty of access to it, letting them waste a little so that they can get good quality forage. And then, of course, at this point in time, right now, the calves are gone and the cows are in here cleaning up the excess forage that was left in those fields. Now, I'm going to spend a little bit of time on this because I don't want to get you too confused. But basically, we had 75 steers born, and we marketed 68 of those as a truckload January 16th. So there were 7 of those that actually went to one of these graded sales. September 1, the calves weighed 447, again, early weaning. And the sale value at the Lynchburg graded feeder calf sale, which we're fortunate to have a very good graded sale that runs weekly, was $374. November 18th, those calves had gained some weight, 564. Sale value at the same sale would have been $427. Now, if you take our costs into account, we had $61.53 we put into those calves. And that includes everything. And I guess what I want to stress is sit down and pencil out what things are costing you. Because if you put everything in there, it'll start to scare you. You know, labor and feed and health products we usually put in. We usually don't put anything in for equipment. You know, that four-wheeler, that pickup truck, all of that stuff costs you every time you run out there and feed those calves. And most of us try to just say, well, you know, we got that anyway. But you've got to take it into account. And then interest on the dollars that you have tied up. January 16th, at that same sale, these calves would have weighed 718 if we'd marketed all 75 through that sale. We would have got $513 for them. Again, about $56 in cost. And I skipped this part before, but let me go back to it. Basically, the net return in that first stage was a negative $8.50. At that point, if we'd let go of those calves at that graded sale, we would have lost money on them. This is the cumulative return. Now, the second stage of this, because of, you know, a little bit about market conditions, of course, that always falls into this when you look at actual market prices on that given day you would have sent them. But basically, we had a net return there of $30 on that second stage. The cattle gained well, and we had a lot of our costs, all of our health costs, were tied up in this first stage. But again, up to $21. Now, the big difference, and the point I want to strongly make, is the big difference here selling these cattle is a tractor trailer load. $568 a head, and that counts, of course, the ones that were in the load and the ones that went to the sale barn at the price that the sale brought that day. But basically, that returned us an additional $55.28. Now, part of that is because of the cattle being in a tractor trailer load. Part of it is now they are identified, their health program is identified, and we do have the reputation of that marketing representative to back up those cattle. So, when the day was done and we sent those cattle out, we made about $75 a head on them. Again, this is the description sheet on these cattle for the tell auction. Well described in terms of their breeds, their grades, and then some description of what program they've been through, what vaccinations they've had. And then again, I think the most important thing down here is Ralph Ketchy, our marketing representative, who is well known and who will stand behind these cattle. And of course, everybody feels good when you go through this and the work's done and the calves are on the scale, and there's a lot less surprises. You have a no sale opportunity on that telephone, and this just is the way to market cattle. There's no question about it. Okay, so for medium sized producers or better, that obviously can work and does work. But how can the small cow-calf producer cash in on this? Those smaller guys that, frankly, there's lots of them that are very interested in trying to make this kind of a program work. One is to grow cow numbers up to that 150 cows or more. And we have lots of young people that are doing that. There's lots of pasture available over most of our state. Older producers are getting out, and the younger ones are coming in and realizing they need more cows to make it work. Add a stocker enterprise, purchase enough calves in the fall to package with your own cattle. That's another approach. And the third approach is to develop a local alliance. We're going to hear more about that, I think, when Clyde gets up here and finishes up the second half of this. But basically, get together with a group of producers, use uniform genetics, health practices, uniform management programs, and use that group power to purchase these inputs. And again, this leads to great savings on feed, health products, and other things that have to go into the program. Here's a couple of examples of ones that have been put together in our area, both of these by county agents, the Nash County Alliance. This particular group does not wean their calves. These are sold basically where they would qualify for this VAC 34 pre-weaning vaccination kind of a program. They do group purchase all of their health products and their minerals, and they've been very successful. They put together about 12 truckloads this year and got a good premium. I couldn't get an exact number out of Mark Hux, the agent there, but he assures me that they're doing good, and I challenged him to push his pencil a little bit harder and get us some numbers. But basically, if you're interested in contacting somebody about how these local alliances work, there's his contact information, and I'm going to put that up again here in just a second. So if you haven't written it down, you'll get another chance. The other one is the Surrey County Cattlemen's Group. This is a county group that decided they needed to do something about their marketing situation. This is small producers. They use similar genetics, although they're not like the Nash County group. They don't go together and buy 20 bulls that are all alike. These guys are a little bit more independent, but they do have pretty similar genetics. What they do is they all agree certain days they'll have them wean their calves. They'll take them to a custom backgrounding operation, and they're backgrounded there for 100 days. Now, this backgrounder was another member of this Surrey County group. He said, I've got some facilities. I want to feed cattle. You know, what if everybody brought their calves to me and I helped straighten them out? So they meet there. They all work together to process the cattle. And basically they get them started, and they don't have to go very far, and it works out well. They have very few health problems with the cattle. They background them on corn silage and some byproducts in that feeding program, and this really helps to start capturing this economy of scale in terms of the feeding, purchase of feed, labor, and all of that. So if you're going to go to weaning, then this is an approach that may really work. And this has returned about $61 per calf over the traditional marketing channel that these particular group of producers use. And so Brian Cave, the agent there in Surrey County, is the contact on this particular for this particular alliance. And there's those contact numbers. And I told these guys I was going to put their phone number up here. So if you're interested in this, they've had a lot of experience with both the good side and the bad side. You know, things they've done wrong as well as right. So if you're interested in this sort of a group, then by all means, give those guys either an email or a call. Now, in summary, there's no question we need to add value to our calves. It's the right thing to do, but certainly just doing it because it's the right thing to do is not enough. We've got to get paid for it. Push your pencil and make sure that what you're doing is not costing you more than you can possibly hope to get out of it. And I think we do have a whole group of good producers that are in that situation. They're just spending too much money, and they've got to come up with another approach. Short-term, very short-term programs for small producers may not be that profitable. They may not be able to get enough back out of these cattle to basically give them an advantage over traditional graded sales. And so they need to compare to those traditional graded sales, not the sale barn, because they need to compare to what they have normally done in the past. Going from a preconditioning program to a longer backgrounding program based on pasture and byproducts is oftentimes quite profitable and is what we're trying to encourage these producers to do. If you're going to go through the trouble of straightening out these calves, keep them, grow them, and try to market them as truckload lots in some way or form. If you can do it with your own calves, if you want to buy calves, or if you want to go into an alliance, that's the way to get it done. Okay, Clyde?